or, as we occasionally like to say,
the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Editions with Alex Levchuk and the Midweek Drivettes on Siren 107.3 FM, a 21st century radio programme with 23rd century philosophies.
Quite right, too. Derek Hanley, welcome back to the Midweek Drive. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Good
Excellent.
To be here.
You've just met the Pope.
I have just met the Pope.
Well, Pope Francis.
Amazing.
He didn't sign himself up for the Midweek Drive this
didn't
year.
Get an autograph.
It's
okay. A shame, but that was...
It'll happen.
Bit of luck.
That's the Roman thing from that perspective. And we also have the welcome return of Katie Dorr back in the house again. How are you, Katie?
I'm very well, thank you.
Hey, and Sue Royce is back with us, too.
Hello.
So there we are. You see, the whole Midweek Drive at Easter season has just developed into a whole wondrous way. So it's tremendous. It's the sort of thing Cameron Tilbury in Nashville would be particularly impressed with. Isn't that right, Cameron?
Yes.
Exactly.
I'm pretty sure of that.
Nice to see that you're reading from the script there, Cameron. It's critical in every sense of the word. Yeah. Where are we in Nashville, by the way? Where are we reaching you at this moment in time?
I'm at a meeting, just in a club, actually, on De Mondbrien, so not too far from where everything kind of happens in downtown Nashville.
Which is very wonderful. I like the way he's put a special vocoder on the actual telephone there, so he gives that kind of little tremolo. Not quite Borg-esque, but, you know, he's working on that side of things.
Yep.
Amazingly enough, Cameron, your choice this week is from a New York lass who's discovered her love of Americana. And, well, it's just...
Yes.
I mean, if this doesn't get Katie and Sue and Derek actually tapping their toes, well, I'll go to Peterborough and say, Tessa Snart, what's it all about? You know, just carry on that basis. Or indeed Emma Tinson, or any other Midweek Drivettes. They haven't gone, Derek. They've just gone on holiday. Anyway, I'm glad it went down well in Nashville. Would you like to take over the reins and please introduce Carrington McDuffie to the world?
Yeah, this isn't exactly what... Well, it's not country at all, so we're doing something a little bit different this week. Carrington is an Americana artist with a bit of a twist. When most people think of Americana, you think more traditional sounds and folky sounds. And Carrington calls herself an electronic Americana artist, and she's living in Austin, and you know, when you live in a city where the city motto is keep Austin weird, you can expect a lot of different things musically coming out of this city. This song we released to radio a couple of weeks ago is starting to pick up some steam. It's different. I think you're really going to like it. I like it a bunch, and best thing we can do is just play it. I hope you enjoy it. This is Carrington McDuffie and Got a Crush on You on Siren FM.
Baby, 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 baby. Who's gonna make me, gonna make me, gonna make me feel lonely? I told you that I'd cry for you, but only for stay, but things just can't go on this way. Yeah, things just can't go on this way. Don't you see? You got a crush on me, and it's true. I got a crush on you. Don't you see? You got a crush on me, and I do. I got a crush on you. On you.
And so it goes. Do you have a crush on Carrington McDuffie?
Isn't that a cool song?
Well, you know, Sue, you were saying what? Beatles-esque.
Yes, I said it that sort of repetition. It reminds me a little bit of the Beatles the Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Yes, it does.
Derek Hamley, you said Carol Bayasaya.
I did. I thought it was refreshingly different. It's very nice. Farrell enjoyed it and a bit quirky like.
refreshingly different from the ace man behind 10th Planet Events and more. Man who's actually going to be responsible on the 16th of April for actually looking after our very own Annette Andre. Special signing. You can go to, dear listener, embarking, Derek. Is that not correct?
Embarking, 16th of April from 10 a.m. till 1 p.m. Photo opportunity, signing, and an interview. So, yeah, very good fun.
We might well try to do that as a location report if we can get it. Because we've never been down to Barking, actually. It's a place we should go to, really.
Yes, it's nice.
Anyway, Katie Dore, what did you make of Miss McDuffie?
I thought it was fab. I really liked the kind of funky, slightly poppy beat to it.
Works on every level. So I think it's thumbs up all around. So, Sue, do you think we should actually invite Cameron to put the feelers out for Harrington to actually join us on the programme?
I think it'd be really interesting to hear what she's got to say. Yes, I do.
Well, that's exactly what she'll do, and that's how...
I'll get right on that.
You see?
Good. He's just asking, you shall receive.
He's got that Easter feeling even before we reach Easter week and we're just in the middle of Holy Week. It's amazing. You know, hence the Pope reference.
There you go.
Happy March 23rd. Little plug for an author, of course, Paul Money, who we promised we'd actually do this in Inspired on Air, and shamelessly actually forgot to mention a local author. I know, the guilt that we went through when I was talking about the author and the lack of mentioning, so I thought let's take the opportunity to mention it in Nashville as well, that Paul Money has released a recent text. Which, do you remember what it was called, Sue?
Oh, that's not fair. I don't know.
It's part of his wonderful space opera. It's his first foray into fictional writing, if memory serves. And he's addressed a whole heap of other goodies on the text that, obviously, if you want to check out Paul Money, is a ghostly diversion. A ghostly diversion. The first of the James Handsome ghost mysteries by Paul.
Hello, this is John Craven, and glad you're listening to Siren 107.3 FM.
What do you like about John Craven? He just bursts in there. You know, we mentioned BBC. It's like a ghostly diversion of its own sense. You know, it's marvellous. Anyway, there we are. It's available now from Astro Space Fiction. There's a great publicity poster.
Alex?
As well. Yes.
I think you have to ask me those couple of questions because the signal is really dropping out.
I think you're right, Cameron. Katie, those last two questions, can you remember them? Go for it.
Have you had an enjoyable telephonic link with us today?
I have.
And will you be joining us again soon?
Yes, hopefully with a clearer signal.
Yay!
A genuine classic, Needles and Pins, The Searchers. As we've said, we're in the discussion, is it about drug abuse? Is it about something completely different? We don't know. It's just wonderful. The person who might just be able to address this from, indeed, the aforementioned Searchers, best English beat group ever, from, of course, the 1960s Mersey Beat era, has to be the legend that is a singer-songwriter. Well, a singer, of course, Frank Allen. Welcome, Frank, to the production.
Good to be on the programme. Thanks for having me.
Genuine delight. You've been singing with the Searchers since 1964.
That's right, yeah, August the 3rd, 1964. It was a Monday night.
There you are.
Yeah.
And they said that rock and roll would actually sort of harm the memory. No, it's still sorted through on that basis. And the Searchers is one of those Mersey beat bands that clearly, not only, obviously there's that other band from Liverpool, I think John, Paul, George and Ringo, I think, who are connected. But, you know, you paved so many sort of ways for opening up the whole sort of notion of music. I mean, Derek, you are... shall we say, of a chronologically gifted time where you probably do remember the Searchers.
I remember the Searchers, and that is just timeless. That is just fantastic to hear. Although I think it's about romance and being romantic.
Frank, is it about romance and being romantic, or is it about a person who has a tattoo artist that sort of goes crazy?
I actually think it's about being young and being naive and... unfettered by the kind of monetary things that affect you nowadays. It was the first flush of freedom that particular decade, but it was with a certain kind of naivety and freshness of youth. And with our groups, it was being lucky amateurs, really, as well. Now you've got to be incredibly professional right from the start, but in our day, we just winged it, really.
Well, we were talking about that prior to the show, and Derek and I were sort of showing times of how the BBC sort of changed in the 1980s. Almost overnight, it would seem, from sort of from being relatively straightforward to get in touch with a head of drama or producers of Doctor Who and so on, to being, well, it's like sort of seeking an audience of the Pope. In fact, it's pretty easy to get an audience of the Pope. Do you think that that's the case, or is it just a case of we're looking back longingly at a past which might have seemed easier, but actually it was just as challenging as we as youngsters have it these days?
I don't think it was challenging, actually. It was fairly easy. Well, once the Beatles had kicked the doors down, it was incredibly easy to get a record contract if you were a group, and especially if you were from the north of England. So everyone at least got their chance then. I suppose they get their chance now when they go on X Factor, but there's like about 3,000 people auditioning. So, and also, you've got to be... I mean, the kids do sing... you know, fantastically now, and they perform like you would never believe because they started at a much higher level. I mean, we didn't perform at all. If you look at our old DVDs, videos, things like that, we didn't actually have an act. We just got on and sung. So it was much easier for us in many, many ways.
Can't believe that June 2016 marks 54 years of non-stop touring for the Searchers.
That's right, yeah. We count our anniversaries from... mid-1962, and that was just before I was with the band, because that was the time when they threw in their jobs just to take the chance of being professional for a while and going to play at the Star Club in Hamburg, along with contemporaries and along with great American idols as well. I don't think they thought that it would last that long at the time. I was with Cliff Bennett and the Rebel Rouse at the time. We had been a professional outfit for two or three years by that time, also a recording band as well. But we were all taking our chances while it was going, but I don't think anyone ever foresaw what eventually happened.
I loved your description, Frank, of the co-headline of the tour with the Rolling Stones that took place at the end of a tour in Australia, actually.
Australia, it was 1966, Australia, February to March.
And you actually defined the Searchers and the Rolling Stones as a bit like Mother Teresa with Vlad the Impaler.
Yes, but the incredible thing about it was that the reality turned out to be totally different, because... our drummer, Chris Curtis, was going through a real crisis point at that time. We'd started to get a bit lower in the charts. Our popularity had dropped considerably. And now we were supporting the Rolling Stones, as opposed to the previous tour of Australia, where we were headlining over Del Shannon. And Chris Curtis wasn't taking the whole thing very, very... very happily. And he'd suddenly discovered the joys of amphetamine. Now, bear in mind, the Searchers were a completely drug-free band. You know, we were the kind of like the choir boys of the beat boom at that time.
You were like Take That of the 60s, let's face it.
I think we were more innocent than Take That.
Well, there you are.
But what happened was that Chris got so bad with his behaviour on that tour that we had to call in the Australian promoter, a guy called Harry M. Miller, to have a word with Chris, because he'd already fallen. He managed to fall off the stage at Sydney Stadium. He managed to collapse on the floor seconds before we were walking on to do an appearance on a TV show, and he got carted off to hospital. We went back to the hotel and flushed all his pills down the loo. So the promoter was called into the dressing room, and he said to Chris, if you don't get your act together, Chris, I'm going to blow the whistle and call the cops. So there was the bizarre situation of the bad boys, the Rolling Stones, sailing through this tour with no controversy whatsoever, and the Searchers, the squeaky clean Searchers, about to be busted for a drugs,
You hate it when that happens.
It was weird, absolutely weird.
Exactly. Derek, any thoughts from yourself?
I'd like to ask you, you must have met so many famous people, the Rolling Stones, the Beatles. Is there anyone you always wanted to meet but never did? You just weren't in the right place at the right time?
Got to be Elvis, really.
Yeah,
Elvis would be my absolute... He's the person that changed it all for me. So, yeah, that would definitely be it for me, Elvis.
Fantastic.
Of course, you were over in Las Vegas in 2014.
Yeah.
Your third engagement in Vegas, and clearly Vegas needs the Searchers.
I don't know if they need us, but they were kind enough to employ us out there. You know, it's an amazing place. I think it's, you know, people love Vegas. I like it less now than I did in the 80s. I used to go there a lot in the 80s, and that was when the gambling subsidized absolutely everything. So you could see like a couple of shows a night with great artists on. I saw Tina Turner, Glenn Campbell, Joan Rivers, Cher, Shirley MacLaine, all for about $50 a night. Well, now if you go out to Las Vegas and go to one of the big shows, you're going to pay about $300 a night. Nothing is subsidized anymore. So it's kind of taken a bit of the shine off for me, but we still enjoy when we go out and play out there.
Sue, we mentioned Take That, of course. You are the number one Take That fan. Well, one of them, shall we say, Gary Barlow and so on. Your thoughts on The Searchers and Frank in particular?
Well, I'll tell you what I'd like to know, Frank. Who were the bands and the individuals that were really inspiring you at the time that you were writing your songs and going out for the first couple of years, first time?
As far as songwriting went, and we were not very prolific there. We weren't really allowed to develop, so most of our songwriting was restricted to the B-sides. And it would definitely be the Beatles who inspired us as far as songwriting goes, because before that, they, you know, opened all the doors. We weren't allowed to believe that groups could write their own songs. That was left to professional writers. So they were the inspiration there. As far as the music was concerned, it was mainly artists of the 50s. We grew up on that change when pop turned to rock and roll, and we had Elvis, the Everly Brothers, Gene Vincent, Jerry Lee Lewis, and all that. So that was the grounding of our music. And then, of course, it changed in the 60s to, oh gosh, a whole load of people. I mean, there were so many great pop stars around that time, but it would be rock and roll for me.
Mm. And you've been touring for over 50 years.
54 years,
yeah, 54 years, to be exact, yeah. Well, clearly you must like it in some form or another. What's your favourite part of touring?
Getting on stage. Always getting on stage. Occasionally, you go to a nice, exciting country and you get to see places, and that is a little boner. So that makes that particular time very exciting and very appealing and pleases you. But essentially, it is the going on stage. There would be no other reason. I haven't had to do this for financial reasons for a good number of years now. But the buzz when you get on stage and the reaction is it's hard to compete with. It's a fantastic feeling.
In a few moments, we're going to find out how you can go and see The Searchers in Newark, as well as Darlington and a whole heap of other scenarios there. But yes, Newark on Saturday the 23rd of April. Yeah, celebrate William Shakespeare and The Searchers. What's not to appreciate about that? It's tremendous. But Katie, your task now, and hopefully Frank will stay with us, is to make a decision. Oh. Would you like Sugar and Spice or When You Walk in the Room? Which one are you going to go for? Sugar and Spice or When
Sue's
You Walk in the Room?
Sue's got a strong opinion about this one, I can see. Let's see.
Sue, which one would you go for?
When You Walk in the Room.
When You Walk in the Room?
Yes.
It seems to be unanimous in this end of the telephone. Is that okay with you, Frank, When You Walk in the Room?
You made absolutely the right choice. I always get asked which is my favourite Searchers record, and it is always When You Walk in the Room. And that's not because that was the first record I was on. It was because it's such a fantastic classic pop song written by Jackie DeShannon, of course. I love Sugar and Spice. I love all of the hits, but none of them, including Needles and Pins, can compete with When You Walk in the Room.
Stay with us, Frank. We'll be back with you in 2 minutes 24 seconds from now.
I can feel a new expression on my face. I can feel a growing sensation taking place.
Said if trumpets were sounding and thunder was booming when you walked in the room, it could be quite frightening. Yeah. What about the pet rats, Frank? You know, they might be very, very concerned about that. I speak on behalf of Katie here with her pair of pet rats. You know, somebody walks into the room and suddenly thunder claps and all knows what could happen.
I like thunder and trumpets, I suspect.
Oh, there we are. A whole new area. I was speaking to Frank Allen from the fantastic band The Searchers. And you're still there, Frank, I take it?
Sorry, I'm still here and hanging on the line here.
Yes, It's always that pattern. But you know, being a seasoned professional, he's not going to put the phone down just because we're playing his music.
Oh, no.
Very critical. Moving on to a couple of the sort of considerations here. We're into March now. Yeah, amazingly, almost at the end of March. On the 29th of March, you're in Colchester, at the Mercury Colchester. 30th of March, next Wednesday, effectively, you're at the Bedford Corn Exchange. And then you're in Ilkley on the Thursday, before April kicks off with a vengeance. April 1st, Camberley. The Talkie Princess on the Sunday. Darlington Civic Theatre, yay, on the 7th of April. Mm-hmm. They cannot wait, Frank. They cannot wait.
Well, neither can I, actually. It's one of my favourite parts of the world. And I'm not kidding. The North East. I made so many friends in the cabaret days of the Stockton Fiesta that I go up to the North East fairly frequently and stay with friends that I made in those days. And I will be doing when we're at Darlington as well.
When we've said in times past, you need to keep returning to the programme, Frank. This is essential. We need to have the diary and the tales of Frank Allen on tour. Although we could always say what goes on in tour stays on tour. But, you know. Anyway, it's the 7th of April in Darlington Civic Theatre where you're there. And as we mentioned, if you're looking in the Lincolnshire area to access the searches, and why wouldn't you be? Probably it's Newark, the best place to go. The Palace Theatre of Newark, of course, on Saturday the 23rd of April. You can go obviously to the Searchers website to find out a whole heap of other fine things from that point of view. We could go on through June and so on, but we thought, no, you know, you've got Eastleigh, Hereford, Wavendon, Frome. Is it Frome? Oh, I'm confused about that. Frome, exactly.
Yeah. And it's Wavendon, by the way.
Thank you. You see, yeah, absolutely. Wavendon. It is. Last week I was listening to Ryan, legendary Ryan, bringer of water for Derek, mm-hmm. and Katie, and they did a little tribute to Sylvia Anderson, and Ryan said Berkshire. No, it's Berkshire, I was saying Berkshire. No, not Berkshire. Berkshire,
That's the eccentricity of the English language. Well, nothing is necessarily as it seems.
It's spelt incorrect.
No, like Leicestershire.
Exactly.
Yeah. Don't get me started on Beaver Castle or Belvoir.
Yeah.
Please, right. It's different light entirely. Derek, any other questions you want to put to Frank at this stage?
Is there a record that is nostalgic to you? Like recently we've had Leslie Gore's old classic, and I can't remember what it was called, in an advert for a famous department store.
It's My Party and I'll Cry If I Want To.
No, it's one more like Women's Lib type great lyrics.
It's the You Don't Own Me.
You Don't Own Me, fantastic.
Yeah, You Don't Own Me, yeah.
You never hear that, or very rarely. Is there a song which you have nostalgically good memories of that you never hear these days?
Well, I could give you a song now, and then tomorrow it would be a different one. You know, it's like that. There's so many songs from my youth. But, I mean, I was listening to a program on Mario Lanza the other night, and if you played me the serenade from The Student Prince, that would be incredibly nostalgic to me. Nothing to do with the pop songs that I grew up, made my living out of, but that something like that would move me entirely. Then, of course, it's the Everly Brothers with... I think Let It Be Me, or one of those songs. But I could go on forever with the favourite songs that change every day.
Well, there's the series Frank Allen's favourite songs.
Mm. They are. There's a whole new album coming out there.
Yeah. I Don't Throw Your Love Away. Don't throw your love away.
Oh, with our songs, that's a good one.
That's a classic.
Started out in life as a B-side, of course.
There we are.
A B-side of a group called the Orlons.
And astoundingly, Frank, there are people who might be listening to this very podcast, or indeed radio show, who might be astounded to know what a B-side is. Let's just test it in the studio. Katie, do you know what we're referring to when we talk about B-sides? Yes, the other side of the...
I absolutely do know what a B-side is, Alex, yes. I mean, I know I was a 77 vintage, but... yes,
you
I do know what a B-side
stage, though,
is.
Where people are not necessarily sort of aware that they'll just download it and they'll take it from that point of view. So
I think a lot of groups wrote B-sides as well because they got the same royalties as the A-side. So if the record got to number one, say the group could write the B-side and they'd earn as much money as the... Mm. The main track.
Yeah, it was a great way. You know, people didn't allow you to cotton on to that till much later, sort of thing. But you know, songwriting is where your pension is, really.
Mm. Mm, yeah.
Frank, we have gone from Australia to Vegas to Newark, right the way through Darlington. I feel as though we've travelled the world already.
Not finished. We're doing a couple of shows in Israel in August. First time we've been there since we played for the troops in the Six-Day War in 1967. We're flying over to Australia twice towards the end of the year, once to do a cruise over there, and then back in January for our... They already started organising our next year's tour in Australia, and there's quite a few shows in Denmark and Scandinavia before that as well.
And that's why we appreciate Laura Levy for putting us together, waving her little magic there in her own sort of publicity's way. It's wonderful. Frank, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today? Has it been okay for you, sir?
It's been absolutely lovely. I mean, I just love doing these programmes because it gets the word out there. And as long as we have an audience coming to see, as long as we have our health, then we'll carry on doing these shows. But everything has to be in place. And it's so important to get on these shows and talk about the people, the music we all love.
I think that deserves a round of applause for Frank Allen. He's... So I take it then you will return in the very near future, Frank, and keep us appraised of how the tour is going and more?
Certainly will. I shall be on your show anytime you care to ask me.
Consummate professional and trooper every day. We said no to sugar and spice. What about sweets for my sweet?
Great song. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, you're picking them so beautifully because that would be my second choice of single.
Well, there we are, you see. And without the tax as well, so far.
And I wasn't even on it.
Genius. Sweets for my sweet, sugar for my honey. Your first sweet kiss thrills me so. Sweets for my sweet, sugar for my honey. Sugar for my honey, I'll never ever let you go. There is the possibility that actually featuring a Liverpool-based band, The Searchers, before we go over to a Manchester-based radio station could be incendiary, potentially. Particularly when we're dealing with a possible Manchester United supporting Sol here, who unfortunately got the wrong result in the derby. But no, I knew you'd sort of think something about... No, I will simply say Fab Radio International embracing the alternative. I'll say that again. Embrace the alternative is the finest... shining light of good quality alternative broadcasting in Manchester. And who do you think might be with us from Fab Radio International at this particular moment in time, Sue Royce?
Couldn't be Paul Ripley, could it?
Is it the Paul Ripley online from Podcast Broadcast World Extraordinaire? Paul, are you there?
I'm there. That's such a lead-in for me. Blimey, I'm overwhelmed. Overwhelmed.
Well, yeah, much like Louis Van Gaal must have been, but still, never mind.
There's always these sly digs going in. Always.
You're asking for trouble.
It was painful, but nevertheless, you know, we work our way through it. To be fair, actually, when Paul was kind enough to actually host a little mini location report that we did at Starburst offices with Emma Tinson and myself, thanks to Ed Fortune as well, I sort of gambled. I gambled with... Because, Derek, you, as a West Ham United supporter,
oh, yes.
Yeah, you appreciate the slight tension between City and United, etc. And I feel he is United as opposed to Blue. But still.
Someone's got to be.
But we love you anyway, Paul. That's the important
thing. Yeah, I'm actually the one born in Manchester who goes to the game.
Exactly. Okay, so moving on to Fab Radio International. We said embrace the alternative. One of the things that I really appreciate about what you do is a bit like Siren and bold and ambitious and other things. You're generally pushing those boundaries and making sure that the sort of areas you're looking to develop are not just alternative, but they're interesting. Tell us about Fab Radio International.
Well, I've got so much to say. The idea was, as you well know, there's not enough community stations and enough alternative stations to the big four groups who own all the radio across the UK. And the idea was to... Because I believe that people want to listen to more than that. And so we created a radio station which had its own niche audience. For example, we've got a new show on board, a guy from... Have you heard of LiveLeak? LiveLeak.com. They're an alternative... Like an alternative to say to YouTube, a massive company. They've got a radio show, and it's the old DJ who snaps back at you and has an opinion. So the idea was a variety of presenters and shows which showed. Because I'm a huge fan of radio, and it's just I've missed out on so much over the last few years, and it's changed so much, and I want to bring that back really.
And I think you're doing a splendid job at actually doing that.
Thank you so much.
Particularly interested in the Mancunian candidate. See what they did there? The Mancunian candidate?
Yes, that's a show that goes out in Florida. We linked up with another station and they wanted our view, our political view and our take on what's going on there, really. the English view of that world.
And as we work our way through, of course, the process of Fab Radio, as we said, is Lady Penelope? Are we echoing the spirit of the whole system? Or is it just because it's fabulous? Is that the sort of line?
No. As you know, we're part of a magazine called Starburst magazine, and that's very much sci-fi and geek, and Doctor Who, and Thunderbirds, and Spider-Man, and Batman, and actually the guys are down in London tonight for the preview of Superman versus Batman. They're down for the preview.
Dawn actually, of Justice.
We're all part of that world, really, so... as you've seen it, the studio is actually a TARDIS.
It is, quite literally, blue TARDIS outside, step through into the whole thing. It is quite literally a TARDIS.
Yeah, so we're all fans of that type of world.
As indeed the web address attests to, there is a lot of magic in the world, a lot of talented people with entertaining views, interests and opinions. At this moment in time, sadly, most radio stations are playlist-driven automatons with no interest in showcasing any of this. Not that they would even be allowed to. All of us at Fab Radio International have set out to change all that. Hooray! The mission of Fab Radio is to bring you the widest possible content in terms of music and subject matter, all hosted by personalities with actual opinions. Sounds like our kind of show, doesn't it, Derek Hamley?
It does indeed, doesn't it? So is this a kind of 24-hour-a-day job, though? Do you wake up thinking, I know what I've got to do or what I haven't done?
Every station has that, but yeah, definitely something like we're not. In fact, in the next 15 minutes, I've got to rush home and log something on from home because I've got to do something at the studios before. So, yeah, it's that type of... It's mad. But it's great and it's fun. And it's just doing so well at the moment. It's untrue. 125 countries listen to us. And that sounds like a big plug, but we're really happy how it's going. This was build it and they will come type attitude.
Exactly. Also, Marvel has never been so big as it at the moment. Marvel, DC, it's the biggest it's ever been. There's so many... films coming out, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Katie, as you were proud to suggest, when actually state, not suggest, when Ed Fortune joined us on the show, you were one of the first people who actually subscribed to Starburst or actually got your news agent to put it aside.
It was the first magazine I ever had set aside for me.
They didn't have radio stations in those days.
No.
You know, what are your thoughts on Fab Radio International then?
I'll be tuning in.
Because, of course, Katie, when she's not actually co-hosting and being a superb midweek drivette, also co-hosts with such luminaries as John Ketley, weather forecaster, the aforementioned Ryan, the water bearer, you know, which is wonderful, who is on a fortnightly show. She's all over the place, really. But
John Ketley.
Oh, marvellous. He was a weatherman. Still is, actually. But in terms of that, Katie, clearly we haven't really got your geek credentials flowing in full force, I feel. You touch on them every so often. You touched them the last week.
I have to keep them in check.
Do you? Well, so this is the point, you see, Paul. You know, we feel with respect to Katie, how does she actually let her geekdom flourish? And is Fab Radio International a place where she can do that and celebrate them?
Yeah. Is it the sort of place...
I would like to think so. In about 10 minutes' time on the station, we've got Niche Night starting, which is really, I don't know how to describe it, arguments about the geekdom and Marvel and DC and all of that. That's the last for an hour. That starts in about 10 minutes' time.
So we could have Team Moffat versus Team RTD.
Let's not mention Moffat at the moment. That's a sore subject.
It could be a few years' time when Chibnall gets hold of it. Lord knows what could be happening. You know,
who knows? But I tell you what, while I'm on, I like to do it. The idea of our station as well is I don't think there's enough stations in this. But I'm so grateful that you've rang and we've linked up in a small way. I'd like to continue with that and link up as much as possible on certain shows that may be appropriate. And like, let's all help and have an alternative to the big four.
When you can actually have a line for Niche Radio Sci-Fi Entertainment, which says, calling all geeks, nerds, Trekkies, Jedi, browncoats, mutants, vampire slayers, and he who must not be named, Geek Knight, is there. I think, you know, we're building those bridges. I mean, Derek, takes us back to, remember the first time when we first bonded over a 10th Planet event package and we came with our reporting routine and did all those pieces in Newcastle Dimensions on time, I believe.
Yeah, and all these years later, we're still here. Someone actually said about geeks, someone texted me when Doctor Who came back and said, Derek, at last, we're no longer geeks. And I think it's no such mainstream, and in fact, to Marvel and DC, it is not geeky anymore, you know.
Unless, of course, you go back to the original definition of a geek who was a carnival operator in the States who used to bite the heads off chickens.
And what's wrong with that?
Not good for the chickens.
I can't imagine as many people wearing it on a T-shirt if they knew what really
If you are a chicken out there listening, preparing for Countryside Links, etc., don't worry, we don't actually bite your heads off when we do our Countryside correspondence routines. And Derek won't when he comes along with Countryside Links. Neither will Katie, I'm sure. Because you know, otherwise, Sue would say, I gave up this for my mum's 65th birthday. You know?
Yes.
God. Kind of chicken head biting on the whole thing. Sorry, sometimes we go off on a tangent. We do it. I think that deserves definitely not just consideration, we will make it happen. We will. Sue, any questions for yourself?
Yes, I'm sort of the resident non-geek in the studio.
You've got an MA in community radio.
I have, yes. But, you know, and since I'm on a bit of an inspiration, motivational type thing this evening, Paul, who are your broadcasting heroes? Because clearly you've got a great passion and a great talent for community radio. So who are your broadcasting heroes?
There's a guy called James H. Reeve. He used to be on Key 103 back in BBC in the Hearing of Manchester. I think he did talk radio as well for a while. He was just sort of an articulate guy. He was just so entertaining. He talked to you. The whole idea of radio, you're talking to one person, he did that so well. I suppose James H. Reeve is my radio hero. Also, and I worked with a guy called James Stanich as well. I produced his show for a while. He was quite amazing. Another type shock jock type character.
He did time up in Metro, I believe, for his sins, actually, up in the northeast of England, James Stanich. Yeah.
He did, yes. He got a big fine from Ofcom.
Yes, he did. That was an interesting line. But still, we'll put him in touch with Andrew David. They'll get together very well. Anyway, that's by the by. They'll be on a river somewhere. Who knows?
What about you guys? Who are you? Who are your radio heroes?
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt, my broadcast heroes were the people that I grew up listening to. I grew up listening to BBC Radio Lincolnshire in sort of the early to mid-80s. And without a doubt, I now work with one. If you'd told me 30 years ago that I'd be working with somebody that I'd been listening to since the age of 9, I'd have told you to go away. It was silly. But without a doubt, my three broadcast heroes would have to be Chris Jones, who is sadly no longer with us, Jonathan Taylor, who is sadly no longer with us, and Dave Bussey, who thankfully is still with us.
Yes. Two dead ones, one live one.
Yes.
That's not bad. You know,
it's not a bad record.
It's a good reference. You know.
Could I ask a question as well? Why were they your heroes?
I think Chris Jones particularly would have gone down very well, I think, from what you've been saying about your radio station and the way that you work. He was definitely a broadcaster who had a very strong opinion. He used to do the telephone phone-in shows in the mornings. And he wasn't afraid. He was a good Liverpudlian, and he wasn't afraid to give you his opinion. If you asked for it, you were going to get it. And he wasn't afraid of controversy either. Whereas Jonathan, JT, he was possibly the most knowledgeable person I think I've ever come across. He really knew his stuff, particularly when it came to music and trivia. He was just a mine of useful information, and he could turn it over on a 50 pence piece, particularly when it came to the Beatles. The Beatles were really his thing. Yeah. He was certainly somebody to have on your team when it came to pub quizzes. He was very good at that. And Dave, just because he knows so much about radio, it blows my brain. He can do things with decks and with microphones and interview technique and
are
things
they legal,
like that.
Sue, the things he does.
But he can make it look effortless. Things that are actually, when you're starting out for the first time, are actually really quite difficult to get a handle on. But he makes it look like it's just effortless, and that's why they're my broadcast heroes.
I understand that completely. I worked with a guy called Phil Wood. He used to do the BBC Manchester, and he was the same. He got into his zone. He was amazing how he set himself up, and I just watched him how he did his things. And you can't teach that, but you've got to see it, I think.
Katie?
There's a racing broadcaster called Alistair Down, and he did a lot of TV. I don't know if he's done much radio. I know he's done a few bits and bobs, but he can paint a picture with words like nobody else. And I think because he's a racing journalist and a racing broadcaster, he's maybe been a little bit overlooked. But he's
not Malcolm Tomlinson, our other racing correspondent.
He's excellent.
Oh, I hope so. Very well.
Absolutely.
Good. He does a lot of our jingles as well. Derek.
That's a difficult one. I don't remember a lot of the names, but I remember radio in the 50s, late 50s, early 60s, where you had good entertainment on a Saturday, or you'd have things like the Clitheroe Kid, or soaps like Wagner's Walk, and they're things I remember. But I used to listen to, well, still do when you can, Tony Blackburn, Terry Wogan there. I don't know anyone like you ladies that are a bit more exclusive there, yeah, but the sort of people
well,
I think of.
Blackburn used to work for the BBC, so did Wogan. They've both gone in different ways, of course, these days. We won't go there. It's a different sort of routine. I'd just say Kenny Everett, that's all. So I think he added a whole range of layers to radio, which still takes some beating. But there we are. So, as we begin to prep for the next part of the production, which features ace writer William Coles, and then from the wonderful world of Star Trek, Larry Nemechek, and then Ilana Rain, of course, will be commenting on the whole show, all being well, our director of We Are All Cylons, and we might well be, it falls to me to throw those last two questions to our newbie, Paul Ripley. Very talented Mr. Ripley, I thought. See what we did there. Uh-huh. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today, Paul?
I've had a wonderful time.
So I take it that, given that we're looking to build these bridges across the Pennines, Lord knows, you know, just the M62 ride alone is worthwhile.
We'll be digging the tunnels.
Exactly. Exactly.
The tunnel? What's that about? A tunnel?
With our own bare hands.
Yes.
East Coast, West Coast, Northern Powerhouse will be there. You will return, Paul Ripley.
You take care, guys.
A round of applause for Paul Ripley, please.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
I woke this morning, love laid me down by the river. Drifting, I turned on upstream, bound for my forgiver. In the giving of my eyes to see a face, sounded silence.